Balada Giribarana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tera Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Jai Shri Shri Radha Madhava Ki Shri Prabhupada Thank you for coming. Today we have two verses. We have Canto 4, Chapter 14, Text 5 and 6. And we have Text 6 on the board. So I'll just read the Text 5 by myself. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam Madandha Utsikto Nirankusha Ivadvipaha Paryatan Naratan Ashtaya Kampayan Ivarodasi. Translation. When he became overly blind due to his opulences, King Vena mounted a chariot and, like an uncontrolled elephant, began to travel through the kingdom, causing the sky and earth to tremble wherever he went. Text number 6. Nayashtavyam nadhatavyam. nahutavyam vijhakshut kvachit iti nyavaraya dharmam bheri gushina sarvashah nayashtavyam nadatavyam nahutavyam vijhakvachit iti nyavaraya dharmam bheri gushina sarvashah. Vaishnavis, yastavyam, any sacrifices can be performed. Na, not. Datavyam, any charity can be given. Na, not. Hutavyam, any clarified butter can be offered. Vija, O twice born, kvachit, at any time, iti, thus, nyavarayat, he stopped, dharmam, the procedures of religious principles, bheri, of kettle drums, goshena, with the sound, sarvashah, everywhere. Translation. All the twice born Brahmanas were forbidden henceforward to perform any sacrifice, and they were also forbidden to give charity or offer clarified butter. Thus, King Vena sounded kettle drums throughout the countryside. In other words, he stopped all kinds of religious rituals. Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. What was committed by King Vena many years ago is at present being carried out by atheistic governments all over the world. The world situation is so tense that at any moment governments may issue declarations to stop religious rituals. Eventually, the world situation will become so degraded that it will be impossible for pious men to live on the planet. Therefore, sane people should execute Krishna consciousness very seriously so that they can go back home, back to Godhead, without having to further suffer the miserable conditions predominant in this universe. Magyanati mirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshurumritanyena tasmai shri guru namaha. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Disha Tarine Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuvivacha Patitanam Padanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Translation again, text number 6, if you like to repeat. All the twice born Brahmanas were forbidden henceforward to perform any sacrifice, and they were also forbidden to give charity or offer clarified butter. Thus King Vena sounded kettle drums throughout the countryside. In other words, he stopped all kinds of religious rituals. The difference between human life and animal life is that humans can perform sacrifice, can apply the cycle of yajna. We both receive everything from the Lord through His material energy, both humans and animals. We receive food, we receive all the necessities of life, light, warmth, water, air, and so on. But the difference is that the animal is not able to offer it back. The animal only receives. Basically, they receive the same things because they have the same needs. The difference is that humans can take, at least symbolically, at least nominally, some of that energy received from the Lord and offer it back in gratitude, in acknowledgement of the source. When this process is stopped, then human life is stopped, because human life degrades to the point of being like an animal, in which we do still continue to receive all the necessary resources, but we don't give them back anymore. And for the animals, that's their natural condition. They are not expected or supposed to perform yajnas, and therefore there is no reaction if a dog doesn't perform any sacrifice. But for human being, its natural condition is to offer some sacrifice. And therefore, when the humans are not offering sacrifice, there is a reaction. There is a heavy reaction. In fact, there are sinful activities in everything he does. There's that verse in Bhagavad Gita that says, Krishna says, evam pravartitam chakram nanu varta yatiya yaha aghayur indriyaramo mogham partha sajivati. This is the third chapter in that section where Krishna describes the principle of yajna. And it's one of the concluding verses. It says, evam pravartitam chakram. This chakram, chakra literally means the wheel or the cycle. If somebody does not apply this cycle of sacrifice, agayur is a sinner. Aga ayur, ayur, I mean, we are all familiar with this word. Aga means sin, like agasura. Ayur, we are all familiar, Ayurveda. So this is agayur, it's a sinful life. Sin pervade all aspects of the life of such a person. Agayur, indriya ramo. Indriya, the senses, rama, the pleasure. So they only live for sense pleasure. So mogham partha sajivati. So this person lives, jivati, in vain, mogham. Mogham, it's defeated. It's a self-defeating existence. It's a bankrupt existence. So when we project this type of mentality, this type of attitude on a world scale, we see that there's a lot of trouble in store, because sin brings reactions, brings pain, brings suffering, brings poverty. We are situated in a very big universe. In other words, relatively, according to the human scale, the universe is much bigger. And we are simply a part of this cosmos. Universe. Universe comes from the word uni, like unique, is the same. Is the same root. So, like unit, uniform, there's the sense of oneness. So universe means is one complete system. Om Purnama Dha Purnama Idam is one system. And our role in this system is that we need to perform yajna. Ultimately, we need to get out of the system, we need to transcend the system, but while in the system, we need to reciprocate with the system. Otherwise, human society becomes a cosmic renegade. It becomes a cosmic reject. And we become alienated from the upper echelons, the elite of the universe. The elite of the universe does not want to have anything to do with us if we don't perform sacrifice. The scriptures we refer to, the historical records we refer to, offer plenty of examples of interaction between human beings and higher beings. Up to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, up to Lord Vishnu. And generally we see it's manifested, this interaction, through the medium of yajna. Great kings supported and aided by great brahmanas, they were performing the system properly, and these personalities would appear. The human beings would see the demigods. But because of Kali Yuga, the process stopped. The world became sinful, and the demigods don't manifest anymore. What to speak of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, what to speak of Lord Vishnu himself. So we are in a condition of alienation. We have been segregated culturally. Culturally segregated. There are still many manifestations of yajna, of sacrifice, in the different religious movement, religious groups in the movement, in the world, some form of offering this energy back to God. There are. And there are millions of people. There are people who build temples or churches or mosques. It's a form of sacrifice. We have some resources obtained by the mercy of God, and we offer it back to God in the form of a building in which He is supposed to be glorified. These scriptures are supposed to be heard and studied. Srila Prabhupada told a story when he was a pharmaceutical businessman in Allahabad. He had a supplier. He's a Muslim supplier. And this man, because of doing this supplying business, became quite rich. So once Srila Prabhupada told them, "Sir, what would you do with all your money now that you're rich?" And then this Muslim supplier said, "Sir, I want to build a mosque." And Srila Prabhupada, he was talking about this episode in a lecture. Srila Prabhupada gives this man as an example of a pious man. When he received money, fortune, opulence, he recognized this belongs to the Lord, and it is my duty to offer it back to the Lord. This is yajna, this is sacrifice. So Srila Prabhupada was approving of this attitude. And we see that throughout the world, this attitude has been active in many cultures. I'm from Europe, and some of you are also from Europe or have visited Europe. I'm just giving Europe as an example, but could go other places. Europe is full of churches, big churches, costly churches, cathedrals, built with the best of architectures, or best of arts. These people, the kings and the powerful men, spent what today would be millions and billions and even perhaps trillions of dollars to glorify God. There are huge, huge constructions. The Cathedral of Köln in Germany took 80 years to construct. And this was done without the technology of today. It was done in the 13th century. And and this is just an example. Every single village in Europe, or at least any traditional village, it's you see there is the village, and in the center there is the church. You can see the bell tower in the center of every village in Europe, be it Spain, Germany, Italy. That's a human configuration. We have a community. We sit in a place, we live and work in that place, and at the center, the best building, the tallest building is for God. And we regularly come together to glorify God, according to different traditions, according to different languages. That's irrelevant. Smita Krishna Maharaj is from Sweden. He was telling us how about 100 years ago in Sweden, every second day, it was a holiday, a religious holiday. It means 2 days of work, 1 day of holiday. And people would go to the church and listen to the preaching of the priest, listen to the Bible, to the gospel, and become pious. Know about the standards of life, know about the values of life, know the importance of austerity, charity, and in general, moral behavior. So you are a simple Swedish farmer, 100 days in 1 year, you go to church and you do something. You listen to about religious teachings. And Srila Prabhupada explains this was current in India, even when he wrote, say, up to 50 years ago, so now that would be something like up to 80 or 90 years ago, at the end of the day, in the villages, everybody will come together and listen to Ramayana, Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata. Srila Prabhupada explains, in that way, even the illiterate farmers, they don't know how to write, they don't know how to read, they're not academics at all, they're not intellectuals. But by listening every day, they will become purified, they'll know the goal of life, they will develop that bhakti for Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, and other avatars, and they will go peacefully to bed and sleep peacefully. And they will learn the philosophy, they will know the philosophy, they will be able to see the happenings of life through the eyes of the scriptures. But nowadays, it's not like that. Nowadays, the farmers in India, of course we cannot generalize, there are hundreds of millions of farmers in India, so we cannot generalize. But there is a lot of suffering in the farms. There are not even farms. I mean, the farmers are suffering in their little fields that they have. The statistics speak of an extraordinary rate of suicide among the farmers in India. Suicide. People are killing themselves. There's a number of reasons, political, economical, psychological. And of course we don't have all the data because most of it may not be even reported. But from say 2002 to 2006, the data was that about 17,500 farmers will kill themselves every year. And 17,500 farmers means about 48 farmers killing themselves every day. This lecture will last more or less 1 hour. 48 people killing themselves means in this hour, 2 farmers would have killed themselves. And the next hour, next 2 farmers. And next hour, next 2 farmers. Every day, every night, every week, every month, and every year. This is going on since a long time. And obviously it's not only the suicides in themselves, which are already noteworthy, they're already remarkable, but the level of agony, the level of suffering, the level of distress that this class of people must experience to come to this platform, the level of hopelessness. And of course, when the farmer, the householder, farmer, the man kills himself, what the wife will do, what the children will do. And what about all the millions of those who don't kill themselves, but maybe consider killing themselves? And there's a lot of reasons. I mean, we can study historically, we can study economically. There is this, some people blame this multinational corporations of hybrid seeds such as Monsanto. These farmers become indebted because they buy seeds that they are supposed to produce a higher yield, higher harvest, but sometimes it fails. So they are completely bankrupt. They have a lot of debts and they cannot repay them back. So many of them, because they're not sustained by the culture of Yajna, they go for dissolution. Because they're not sustained by the Bhagavata culture, they don't see any alternative to kill themselves, which is an act of very, very intense ignorance with very serious consequences for that soul. There are also historical reasons. Before the British Raj, before the dominion of the British over India, the system was that was a communist system on the village level in India. The village would own a certain amount of lands. There was no private property. So farmers would have maybe their own little garden. But the main grain producing area around the village belonged to the village. Sometimes this political arrangement was compared to a mini republic. And so the village was very strong. Nobody would go hungry because everybody, of course, some years would not be such a great harvest maybe, but no, we are together. It's the British that at the end of the 18th century introduced private properties in India. And that made the whole system collapse because the individual became vulnerable. So one bad year means you're out of business. And often you had to go and run to the cities and live in slums and live under very miserable condition. You lose your culture. No more Bhagavata and Mahabharata talks in the night. Only very heavy schedule of commuting, 1 hour, 2 hours in crowded trains, up and down. And that's your life, to produce the same thing in the village you can produce directly. So the situation is serious. I pulled out some data for you. You might have heard recently in different parts of the world there were food riots. People started rioting, started protesting and breaking down shops and protesting because the food prices went up beyond their capacity of affording the food. We are not talking about luxury items. We're talking about food, how to fill the stomach from day to day. And it's a phenomenon that is very much felt in many parts of the world. Food costs much more than it costs few years before, someplace, few months before, and many, many poor people can't afford food anymore, and they're rioting, and there are some economic, we could call it laws, quote unquote laws or standards, that when the world grain reserve stock goes below 60 days of reserve. In other words, when in the world we have less than 60 days of grain reserve, the price go up. And it happens basically all the time. This is an article for a few years ago. For instance, in 1972, there was a 56-day reserve. Only 56-day reserve of grains. So that triggered a doubling of grain prices. Just because going below the 60-day reserve level, the grains doubled. So just to feed their family, people had to spend double. And even in that, there are many considerations. Like for instance, see the consumption of meat. In the last 55 years, the world went to producing and consuming 44 million tons of meat in 1955, to producing 265 million tons. And that's not only due to the growth in population. So one may think, well, there are more people, they consume more meat. No, They consume, considering the population growth from 1955 to today, consumption of meat has more than doubled. From 17 kilos per head to 41 kilos per head. And of course, we all know that meat is one of the greatest, the meat industry is one of the greatest polluters of the planet. And we know that in America, for instance, about 90% of all the grain doesn't go to feed humans, go to feed animals that they would be killed and then eaten by humans. So there is a very kind of perverse economic system. There is a downgrading spiral in the economy, in the psychology of the world. It all starts with disconnecting human society from the cycle of yajna, from God consciousness and the offering of sacrifices to the Lord, to please the Lord in recognition of His kindness in giving us these resources. So these are a few considerations related to this text in which Vena stops all yagya, stops all charity, stops all homas or fire sacrifices. Any question or comment? Yanagami Prabhu, can we get a mic to him?
So the earth is still producing grains even though sacrifice is diminishing.
Pardon?
The earth is still producing grains to feed all these animals, even though sacrifice is diminishing.
So yes.
How is that explained?
That the earth still produces
grains.
Okay.
Yeah. Even though the sacrifices are diminishing.
The earth has a tolerance level, I guess. I mean, it doesn't stop immediately to feed the people. I'm not aware. These are very esoteric calculations. What does it take for the earth to stop producing grains completely? And there are also very many factors which are very subtle, very hard to compute, to factor in. Like, for instance, you're saying there are less sacrifice. Yeah, but say more people chant Hare Krishna. In the 1955, when people were eating less meat, 17 kilos of meat per day, less people were chanting Hare Krishna, at least outside India. Now, 56 years after, there are people chanting Hare Krishna all over the world. So, we may not be able to calculate exactly how much counterbalance, how much one person chanting Hare Krishna 16 rounds a day, 1,728 times a day, the Maha Mantra, counteracts all the other lack of sacrifice. That we are not, I mean, I'm not able to calculate. I mean, somebody maybe can write a program or something. But I don't know. It may be that a lot of these sins, not maybe, certainly, a lot of this sin and this, a lot of this neglect of the principle of sacrifice are counteracted by the chanting of the holy name in different parts of the world. Let's not, of course, forget that in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that yajnanam japa yajnosmi. Of all the sacrifices, I am the chanting of the japa. So more and more people are taking up this japa yajna, and this certainly has an effect. And also many people are taking up to religious life. And maybe in other traditions, many people are becoming Muslims. In the world, many people are becoming Christians. unofficial figures is that in China there are about 300 million Christians. I was surprised once I took a bus from one city to another. It was a 2-hour ride in the countryside, and just looking out the window to the villages, they resembled European villages, because there was the village and the bell tower of the church in the middle of the village in China. It was not just one village. After 5 kilometers, another village with the church in the middle of the village. So yes, there is some people, especially say in Western Europe and other parts of quote-unquote developed world, who are officially and formally declaring that there is no God and there is no need of any religious performance. Actually, it would be better if human beings would forget completely about religion. So there is this propaganda going on. There are bestsellers books in America centered on the idea that God doesn't exist. So there is this propaganda, but there is this also this other tendency. There are many people who are accepting religion that, and they were not religious before. So there is a balance. So I don't have the data for how many people are going in this direction, how people are going in that direction. And I also don't know exactly the fact that people going in this direction, say starting chanting Hare Krishna, how much they counterbalance those who are preaching a godless consciousness. Like for instance, some of you may be aware, because it was all over the internet, and some of you may have seen it in London, there was a campaign. Some people, an atheist group, made the big signs on the buses, London buses. And the sign basically said, I'm paraphrasing, but this was the message: God does not exist, so now you can relax and be happy. So, have you seen that? You seen that? Is it from London beginning? You've seen that. So, and so that's a concept. In other words, the only reason that the people, human beings, are not happy is because they believe there is a God. And this somehow psychologically constrained them to some sense of guilt, some sense of inadequacy. And that's the reason why people are not happy. It's like we say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, become godless and be happy. That's their mantra, basically. Perhaps we would like to see them a little bit more, applying integrity in their message, because they say to people, God doesn't exist, be happy, but they themselves somehow feel this missionary zeal, this evangelistic eagerness to tell their own world, so they spend their own money to organize this campaign. This costs millions of dollars, not cheap, to put boards, big boards, on all the London buses. So they preach this philosophy, but are they actually experiencing this philosophy? Why they feel so incomplete, dissatisfied, although they are realized souls, in a sense, they realize there is no God. Why they are still unsatisfied and they have to do these campaigns and go and preach? Anyway, maybe they're very merciful to the people in general. That's why. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'd like to offer a possible response to Gyanak Gamya's question, and that is that food is not measured just in size or quantity, it's measured in nutritional value. And according to many nutritionists, the nutritional value of food that we buy in the supermarkets is has dropped by a large percentage point, so much so that there are children in the United States, for example, their stomach is full, but they're getting all kinds of diseases which are symptomatic of nutritional deficiencies, like scurvy. You know, scurvy was what the sailors in the old days, when they traveled on the sea, they didn't get enough fruit or stuff. The kids have scurvy, they have rickets, they have all kinds of diseases. So there are many, many ways in which nature is actually withdrawing its potency. Although the supermarkets may be full, the shelves are stocked up, but actually it's useless food. And in this way, the world is moving towards a tipping point where it looks fine up until the last moment, when all of a sudden there's a complete disaster. There's many areas where the forests are being stripped, and they say like the Amazon forest, for example, is the lungs of the world. So when the world can no longer breathe properly, this cycle of reoxygenating the atmosphere is taken away. We can't breathe properly. Our food is useless, and there's more and more desertification of the world. For instance, during the Roman Empire, the breadbasket of the Roman Empire was North Africa. Does anything grow in North Africa today? Nothing. So like this, deserts are increasing all over. The food is reducing in nutritional value. Then you mentioned Monsanto company, they produce these seeds which don't reproduce. So everything may look nice for a while, but all of a sudden there could be a great disaster. That's all.
Thank you very much for these sobering thoughts. So if there is no more comments or questions, we can close here. And we can just read just the end again of the purport of Srila Prabhupada. Eventually, the world situation will become so degraded that it will be impossible for pious men to live on this planet. Therefore, sane people should execute Krishna consciousness very seriously so that they can go back home, back to Godhead, without having to further suffer the miserable conditions predominant in this universe. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.